Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Mads.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. I'm Jeremy Mags, and over the next 30 minutes, I'll bring you the latest headlines from South Africa and around the globe. Whether you're tuning in live or catching the podcast later, please stay with us for in-depth conversations with leading business minds, political influencers, and key newsmakers. It's everything you need to stay informed. Quick, sharp, and straight to the point. It's Tuesday, the 8th of October. Coming up on the program, a proposal to rename Sandton Drive. As water restrictions are imposed here in Gauteng, we'll look at the role of wastewater management in easing the load. And a new survey shows renewed hope among small and medium enterprises. The Democratic Alliance in Sandton claims that it's collected over 4,000 submissions objecting to the City of Johannesburg's proposal of renaming Sandton Drive to Leila Khaled Drive. The Johannesburg municipality's proposal has been under fire since it suggested that the road be renamed after a controversial Palestinian political figure, Leila Khaled. With more on the story now, Vuyosile Mshudulu joins us, who is Director of Arts and Culture in the city. Welcome and thank you very much for joining us today. So maybe let's start with the process itself. How did the proposal to rename Sandton Drive come about? What was the motivation? What was the thinking behind it?
Thank you for welcoming us and greetings to the listeners. As you know, that the city of Johannesburg has got a policy on the naming and renaming of streets. And in terms of the policy, it makes provision for members of the public, interested groups, even councillors within the city to propose changes to a certain name or the naming of unnamed streets and public features. So in line with that policy, a proposal was made in council through a motion that was carried on the 28th and 29th of November 2018, proposing the renaming of Sandton Drive to Leila Khaled Drive. And the motivation was, as I understood, in that council meeting, in line with the strengthening the ties of the South Africa and Palestine, but in particular strong ties that the city of Johannesburg has with the city of Ramallah.
What's the current process that is now underway?
So currently, in terms of our process, any proposal for a renaming must be subjected to a public participation process. And as things stand, we have opened for submissions for the public to make representations, whether for or against the proposal. And the process is currently opened until the 15th of October, 2024. And members of the public are encouraged to participate as much as possible to make their voices heard through the relevant channels. And this can be either through a direct submission to the city or to email their representation to the email addresses that have been provided in the advert.
Now, in terms of that public participation, as I said in my introduction to our conversation, one political party, the Democratic Alliance, is claiming that it has 4,000 submissions objecting to the proposal. How then would authorities look at that particular issue and address those concerns?
So what we'll do is that at the end of the closing date, which is the 15th of October 2024, the administrative side of the city, which is our culture heritage, will then synthesize all the inputs that are received and categorize them into submissions that are for and those that are against. And the proposal, or at least the submissions that are in the majority, will then be put together into a report that is going to be presented to council, for council to then have a resolution on the public sentiment that has been expressed through this process.
Could I ask you whether the city itself has a position or a view on it?
Well, as the administrators in the city, because you have to understand that you know, the city has got a political and an administrative element. As the administrators, our role is to implement the policy and to ensure that, you know, all the sentiments that are expressed, all the representations that are made, irrespective of what they may be, are recorded and are also then put in the report that is going to be presented to council. And then ultimately, it is council that is going to make the final decision on whether the name changes or not. But that is pursuant to what the majority view would be in the submissions.
Let me try and reframe the question if I can. Does the city of Johannesburg believe that the controversy around this proposed name change is justified?
Well, as a city, we take the view that, you know, and this is from experience, that there are many proposals that come through the naming and renaming process. And many of those will evoke contestations and contradictions, as we have witnessed in the past. And our role is, irrespective of the view that we hold, is to respect public sentiment at the end of the day, because the way that the process is designed is not really to accentuate the view of the city, but it is to make sure that the view of the public is the one that prevails at the end of the day.
But surely the city has a say in this, and particularly your office, given the potential of this particular name to be deeply polarizing, as we've already seen from many reports. Is a neutral naming convention perhaps not more more safer, perhaps, is the word I'm looking for?
Well, our view as a city is that, you know, questions of neutrality insofar as history is concerned are very difficult to achieve. And I think that, you know, all democratic dispensations have an understanding that, you know, there would always be contesting views around, you know, historical symbols and historical representation, because you would appreciate that many people come from different vantage points of history. And ours really is to allow those contestations to exist in a way that is democratic, to find expression in a way that is in line with our constitution, to provide for the free right to expression irrespective of what the expression may be, as long as that in so doing, you know, we comply with the policies and the legislation that is set out in terms of the naming and renaming process. And questions of neutrality are also very difficult to discern, because, I mean, the mere fact that there is a proposal does not necessarily mean that we have to ignore that. In terms of our process, we have to give a voice to the proposal and to allow it to run its course in terms of how the process is designed.
Thank you very much indeed for the explanation. That's Vuyisile Mshudulu, who is Director of Arts and Culture in the City of Johannesburg.
Top stories to keep your eyes and ears on.
Everyone has something to say when it comes to South Africa's energy challenges, but few know the facts, the context and the realities at the coalface. Tune in to The Current, the definitive podcast on South Africa's energy transition. From coal to clean and ICE to EVs, get the facts from the experts. To listen, follow Investec Focus Radio SA wherever you get your podcasts. Investec Bank Limited is a licensed FSP. T's and C's apply.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, I don't need to tell you that Gauteng is bracing for tighter water restrictions as municipalities implement level one restrictions to manage the province's dwindling supply. The province now warning of a potential crisis if municipalities fail to restrict water usage. These restrictions will run through until March 2025 to ensure system stability during the hot summer months. So is there a renewed debate possibly over business and its use of wastewater? Well, stepping into that debate is Kate Stubbs from Interwaste, and welcome to you. And first of all, from your perspective then, how severe do you see this current water shortage in the province, and what might happen if the restrictions are not enforced?
Water is life. We cannot live without water. So we would need to urgently raise awareness about water in general, because South Africa is, in my opinion, facing a water crisis. We are already a water-scarce country. Some of the statistics show that we are facing a 15% deficit in supply versus demand by 2030, which is really around the corner. Water reports from the Department of Water and Sanitation show that there's an overall decline in water quality, water systems across the board over the last 10 years. So our water quality and systems are declining, and the amount of leach in our systems is rising. And there are numerous challenges besides climate, urbanization, population growth. Our water systems and our water availability is under pressure, and we can't live without water. You know, we've had an energy crisis affecting the country for the last two decades, and we can manage, you can make energy, you can work around it. But as humans, as living beings and as businesses, water will have a health and economic impact on us. So we want to urgently raise this issue about water.
Part of the problem, of course, Kate, is that municipalities themselves are not better managing their resources to prevent the decline that you've just outlined. And that has a direct impact on the availability of water. So before we even look at the utilization of something like wastewater, that surely has got to be the first priority.
Absolutely. I mean, there are numerous issues affecting our water, but you're spot on a municipal side. Just some of the latest reports, you know, and we're talking about Gauteng and Gauteng water restrictions. I mean, 20% of the water supplied from Rand Water to our municipalities already lost before in their systems. 20%, that's a lot of water. In Gauteng, we've got over 46% of non-revenue water or leakage in our systems. So we're talking about water shortage and water crises, but we're losing clean, fresh, treated water already in our systems. So that requires urgent attention. So, I mean, when we talk about what we can do, let's fix leaks as a basic minimum to start with. And then obviously there's infrastructure investment and maintenance that requires urgent attention. But yes, there's a lot that needs to be done urgently already in our municipalities.
All right, so that sketches the backdrop for us. What role then can better wastewater management play in addressing these problems that you've outlined?
Yeah, it's something maybe we haven't leveraged enough as a country. From a legislative perspective, just out of interest, wastewater or liquid waste is banned from landfill disposal. And wastewater is created in most industries, you know, from wash-based sumps to industrial cleaning processes, you know, there's wastewater mining. So most industry users has wastewater. And, I mean, our sewage systems are set up on wastewater. And we need to look at urgently repurposing, retreating that to not only be compliant to prevent pollution into our already burdened water systems, but as a reuse mechanism, because that then puts less burden on our fresh sources. And, you know, the great news is that most wastewater can be repurposed, even to potable standards. That's a little bit more expensive getting to that absolute to drinking standards. And a lot of people may need to get their minds around that, but you can do that. I mean, Singapore is doing that very successfully. But we need to look at retreating and repurposing our wastewater for industrial cleaning, agriculture. Our agriculture industry uses 70% of our water in South Africa. You know, in Israel, 90% of their crops are watered by wastewater. It's been repurposed, retreated to clean standards.
And to your point then, before you can start doing that, you've got to get compliance mechanism in place. How do you do that, and why would that be difficult?
Well, to be compliant, you need to invest in the right solutions. you know, setting up, I think the difficulty, or maybe could be tricky, is the type of wastewater treatment work or the system that you require, let's say for your industry or whatever. So there's no silver bullet for wastewater or liquid waste. It's different, and there are different processes and different technologies to treat different types of wastewater. There are solutions available. They can be more costly than what you're currently doing, but then are you being compliant? So they sometimes it does require investment, large, but we're already seeing a shift in industry. So those industries that are large water users and have produced wastewater are looking at, or have already invested in their own, what we call on-site effluent treatment plants. Over time, it pays back itself because they're able to reuse that wastewater that's retreated back into their processes. But yes, you need to go through a process, and it does need a level of expertise and skill and investment.
In terms of that investment, are initial costs very high?
It can be. It depends. You know, it really depends on the type of wastewater you're treating. Some are fairly simple. Some you can even get to natural processes. But I'll give you an example on our end. But this is treating very contaminated, quite tricky, complex waste stream like leachate from landfills or highly contaminated liquid from industry. You know, the plant we've just launched in April was R100 million investment. Now that's quite a significant investment, but then we are treating and repurposing quite contaminated liquids. So it really depends on the level of contamination and the type of liquid waste you have.
Kate Stubbs from Interwaste, thank you very much indeed.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
South African fintech iKhokha has surveyed 1,000 of their merchants, with 71% feeling a little better about the current state of their businesses compared to earlier this year, 90% saying they feel more confident about prospects heading into the festive season. Additionally, 90% of those surveyed reported that recent improvements in South Africa's economy, as well as the formation of the Government of National Unity, or the coalition government, the easing of load shedding and the stronger rand is making them feel a lot more positive about the future of their business. In conversation now with Matt Putman, who is Chief Executive Officer of iKhokha. And Matt, first of all, then, the key factors behind this recent surge in SME confidence heading into the festive season, and one hopes beyond. What do you think it is?
I think it's a combination of things, Jeremy. I mean, firstly, I think the formation of the Government of National Unity has done a lot for improved sentiment and business confidence. I think off the bat, small business owners have seen some improvements in some of the key areas that have held back small business over the last 2 years. Obviously, things like load shedding, things like a strengthening rand, things like rates cuts starting to, you know, come into effect, things like input costs for diesel and petrol coming down, the rand strengthening. All of those are probably some of the key levers that have driven this increased positive sentiment.
Do you think it's too soon to celebrate? We're not out the woods yet, are we?
Yeah, I think it's definitely too soon to celebrate. I agree. But I think that we probably should at least celebrate the small wins. And I think, you know, the fact that the rand is trading where it is, the fact that we have seen inflation cool and obviously finally had our first easing of rates and hopefully another one to come in November, I think those are things that, you know, show us that the country is moving in the right direction, and we should build on that momentum, but agree that, yes, we're still quite far from being out of the woods.
Now, obviously, you play in the SME space, and you're very close to trends in that particular sector. Many, in fact, 74% surveyed say that they have seen significant sales increases. What sectors, Matt, are seeing the most growth, do you think?
I think retail has seen a nice recovery post-elections. There was a big pullback in the retail and hospitality space as people kind of held their breath through the election cycle. So I think retail and hospitality and hair and beauty are starting to see some nice lift. And I guess the hope is going into, you know, what is generally a very high trading period for lots of retail and hospitality businesses at the end of the year, November into that December, January kind of holiday season. The hope is that with kind of interest rates coming down, inflation cooling, I guess more positive sentiments around South Africa, we'll see a, you know, good tourism, people, you know, feeling more confident to spend money and having less financial pressure going into this peak, you know, trading period for small business.
So as I say, you work very closely with individuals in this sector. You're painting a very optimistic picture at the moment, but you'll also tell me that cash flow and access to working capital will always remain a problem for this particular cohort. How do they get around that, and what is your organization doing in that respect?
Yes, I think cash flow and access to, you know, funding and working capital is a massive challenge for small business in South Africa, and it's the single biggest reason that businesses fail. And it's obviously been a very tough kind of 2-3 year period for small businesses based on a whole bunch of macro things that have obviously negatively impacted them. In terms of, I guess, the role we play, we take a very different view on how to provide access to capital to small businesses. We look at their raw trading data, so we're less interested in kind of the traditional historic criteria that, you know, legacy banks and lenders would use to measure small business. And we just look at raw trading data in partnership with Retail Capital, which is now a division of Tyme Bank. And on that basis, we're able to make very smart decisions around what capital works for businesses to be able to repay sustainably. And we also, we provide that capital in a very custom, easy to manage way for them, where they can access it within 24 hours. It's an unsecured product. And we see a very high repeat take up rate of our lending product with businesses who will use it to buy stock, will expand staff, you know, will potentially expand premises. And 80% of these SMEs will not get a traditional loan from a bank. So for them, it really is a lifeline. But we see once they get that capital, they use it effectively to grow their business. And on an annualized basis now, we, you know, we're putting about R1 billion worth of working capital into this SME space, which is much needed.
All well and good. But at the beginning of the process and during the life cycle of the business itself, how are you assessing risk?
So we assess risk really on raw trading data. So we look at, you know, because we have access to the card payments that go through these businesses, we take a view on, you know, what is that card volume? How often are they accepting payments from customers? What do their trading patterns look like? And after 90 days, based on us now having kind of 5-6 years worth of data built into a very robust model, we're able to predict what level of capital, you know, will get this business to the next level, but it's also sustainable for them to pay it back. And they normally pay it back over kind of a 7-8 month period. And it's taken as a future percentage of their card turnover. So as they trade, if their trade picks up, they pay it down quicker. If they have slower trading periods, then they take longer to pay it off, but the cost is the same to them. So it doesn't negatively pull them down from a cash flow perspective. And on that basis, we see very low failure rates and very high repeat uptake rates with small businesses because the model works for them in where they are in their life cycle.
But they still have to remain very deft and fleet-footed because markets are generally competitive in that space. They have the challenge of maintaining profitability. They're constantly having to deal with rising input prices, I guess regulatory burdens, and the age-old South African problem, the lack of skilled labor.
Yes, I mean, those are all very real problems, and I guess hence why we see, you know, the business failure rate in SMEs that we do in this country. I guess on the input cost side, you know, two of the big input costs is people having to now take on the additional cost that load shedding, you know, has added to the supply chain, to running a business, etc. And, you know, with the trend line we've seen over the last kind of 3-4 months, that seems to be easing. And then the other input costs, which I guess also generally, you know, impact a lot of sectors, are things like diesel and petrol costs. So I think the fact that that's coming down as well, and that the rand is strengthening, and that inflation is cooling, hopefully means that we head into a more sustainable cycle in the next 12 to 24 months.
Well, I hope your optimism bears fruit. Matt Putnam, thank you very much indeed. And just before I bid you farewell, two quick stories from moneyweb.co.za. The first revolves around the SABC, and despite receiving an unqualified audit for the first time in 14 years, the financial future of the corporation remains uncertain. That's according to media experts as well as a former board member. The public broadcaster receiving an unqualified audit opinion for the 23-24 financial year. That was a statement that was put out a little earlier, and it attributed this to financial discipline and good governance. However, it is cautioning that its ability to meet its obligations over the next 12 months or so is, in its words, uncertain and will require the ongoing implementation of severe austerity measures. This says the SABC is going to include very limited investment in new content. And the Department of Electricity and Energy is currently drafting regulations to set out how government is going to procure private sector investment in transmission lines, and it hopes to commence with a pilot early next year. That's a pilot round. The process, we understand, will clarify many unanswered questions regarding the extent of private sector involvement in the 1.5 trillion rand transmission development needed up to 2032. And the a lot more information needs to be given on the institutional arrangements of the procurement program, as well as the nature of the contracts that are going to be concluded. All of that becoming clear after yesterday's official launch of the National Transmission Company of South Africa, taking place at Eskom's Megawatt Park head office. The NTCSA is now an unbundled subsidiary of Eskom, but must eventually be established as an independent company outside of the troubled utility. On our last online poll, I spoke to you about fixing home affairs. We have a new minister in charge, and we had an extensive interview with him yesterday. That's Minister Leon Schreiber. And my question to you is all of this starting to work or not even close? And around 50% of our respondents saying not even close, which I guess is better than nothing. And a high-profile story that has been doing the rounds over the past couple of hours, the resignation of John Tlope from the Judicial Service Commission. And my question to you today, is this something that was inevitable? Do you see this as a political power play, or has damaged the JSC's reputation? If you have a view on that, you can participate in the poll either on X or LinkedIn, and I will bring you the results on the Wednesday edition of MoneyWeb at Midday. And that is also our program for today. MoneyWeb at Midday is live at noon weekdays. We are then up as a podcast. As always, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at Midday, or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.